All right, good morning, everyone. This is a meeting of the South Kingstown Technical Review Committee. The date today is Wednesday, March 21st. Up first on our agenda, we have approval of the minutes from February 21st, 2018. I have a few revisions from Ron O'Brien, correct spelling errors. Any other comments on the meeting summary? If not, I'd accept the motion to approve.
Motion made.
Second. All those in favor? All right. Second on our agenda, we have development plan review for the Union Fire District. This is a request to construct a 700-square-foot addition and associated site improvements to the existing Tower Hill Fire Station, AP 42-2, lots 16 and 17.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Good. Could you gentlemen state your name for us?
Joe Casali, registered professional engineer.
Bill Lavery, project manager with Joe Casali Engineer.
Sure. The crux of it is about a 700-square-foot addition. And part of the proposal, the site improvements include a new domestic and fire protection water service. We're also proposing a new septic system. We're redoing the parking area to give the department as much parking as necessary. We also have a future pad for a generator on site. We have been in contact with DOT for a physical alteration permit, as well as CRMC and DEM for our septic. So this is the first stage, is we're at the TRC meeting, and I believe we have filed applications for to be before planning for DPR next month, and then for zoning the following month. So we're looking at March, April, and May. The department's anxious to get this out to bid, start construction as soon as we can in late spring, early summer, and see if we can wrap this up before the weather comes back in for next year.
It may not leave.
It may not. It's been prolonged.
Okay. Ron, do you want, or would you like me?
No, we have an issue with this project, only in the sense that we're estimating that the existing building predated zoning regulation. That use is only allowed in R80 by special use permit, and there is no special use permit on the structure. So pre-existing would be allowed to remain, but any intensification of that, you would require a special use permit. The as arranged on the site plan, the front lot line setback and the setback to the parallel sideline directly behind the building both do not meet dimensional requirements for setback, so you would need a dimensional variance. Town of South Kingstown does not have anything in their ordinance that allows specifically for a special use permit and a dimensional variance on the same property. This project can't proceed as planned. Chelsea might better expound on some options. Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, the option that we went out to propose are faced with this issue, especially for your use, would be to maybe apply for a zoning map amendment, right? So change it to GI, where you'd be allowed use and you would need a special use permit, and then you could get a variance on the GI property that would be the issue.
So the enabling legislation was never put into the zoning, the Newton?
South Kingstown, right. So the state law basically lets municipalities determine how they want to address it.
Right.
And if it doesn't say they have both, then we can't. So that's right. Specifically enabling. We only did that with solar, because we did that recently with our solar permits last year.
Okay.
And with that, we want to make sure with the special permit the variance, so we enabled it for that thing specifically. I think the other thing you could do, so you could want to change the GI, right?
Yep.
Two, you could propose the zoning ordinance amendments, right? So you
proposing an administrative subdivision to combine the lots, so the entire structure, including the addition, is out of the proposed building envelope. Are those pre-existing? We were going to ask for both a special use permit and three-dimensional variances before the zoning board. Out of an abundance of caution, we were going to ask for the dimensional relief, even though they may be pre-existing.
Yeah, did you ask Amy Gomes about pre-existing dimensional?
Well, not pre-existing, but I did not ask Amy that specific question, but I know historically how it's been ruled is that if you have a pre-existing nonconformance, that's fine, it's a pre-existing nonconformance. Any intensification of that requires a dimensional variance. So you're proposing to intensify, physically enlarge the building in such a way that it impacts the setback, two of the setback requirements. So you're going to require a dimensional variance for that relief.
Right, but it doesn't further impact the dimensional relief. So the pre-existing, and maybe, I mean, it's a legal question, but so pre-existing, we still had front yard, side yard, and rear yard relief. We're not exacerbating that relief. Out of an abundance of caution, we were asking for it, but if the Newton law doesn't allow us to go forward, then would there be a decision by the solicitor that if it's already pre-existing and we need not ask for it?
I'm not an attorney. That is a good question for our solicitors. Mm-hmm. I will tell you historically, just as analogous, if somebody had a house and they were too close to the property line, they were granted relief saying, yes, you can put an addition over there, fine, a single-story addition, whatever. And then at a later date, they want to put a second story on that same addition, they have to get another dimensional variance because they're not intensifying the setback, but they are affecting it again in another way.
No, I agree with you. And I'm just asking the difference, I think, in your example and ours is that house didn't pre-exist a code. This building was built before the zoning code even was enacted. So would that give it the rights not to ask? I don't want to, out of an abundance of caution, if Newton is going to be an issue, get tangled up if it's not required. If you would just please ask that, and if that's not the case, then we'll go back to the department and ask them if they want to either change the zone, which would probably be a lot easier for us than to change your...
I mean, this is a problem that we've talked about, this problem on multiple projects that have come up, so it's something I think the planning board has discussed and will continue to discuss. I don't know that it will happen within the time that you're looking
right for. And we talk about it at the state level all the time, too, that, you know, legislature gave you the enabling legislation to do this, and you haven't enacted it, and now you get projects like fire stations that can't proceed.
And really, I mean...
But if the pre-existing nature of the building precludes us asking for dimensional relief, then we could just go to the zoning board for a special use permit. But I'm not an attorney either. I don't know the answer.
And really, when you think about a fire station use, that is an appropriate use for a GI zone, right? So at the end of the day,
if the decision is that they want to change it to the GI, can they come in front of the planning board and do we just make that a contingency or a, I guess, approval is contingent upon them getting the approval for the GI? Just so they don't get hung up on the process.
Yeah, so you could move forward with the development plan review, have a conditional development plan review on to change the zone, the GI.
Right.
And then it wouldn't actually be effective until.
Because now,
well, I think that's the question for Amy. And in a GI, I don't honestly know offhand.
But would the
existing
so the council would change the zone, and they would have the authority to alleviate the special use permit and the dimensional relief.
Correct. Right. So if you change it to GI, you wouldn't need a special use permit because you'd now be in conforming use.
And they could alleviate the need.
For dimensional variance, potentially.
Well, worst case scenario, if you did need a dimensional variance, that would be you could apply for that because the special use permit is no longer required.
Right.
With the change of zoning.
So now we're going to go before planning and ask them not only for DPR approval, but recommendations before zoning, which we may want to change that and ask them for DPR approval and a recommendation to council on the zone change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you have to put in the zone change application goes through the planning board as well, so you want to submit that so the board can consider it.
Okay.
Chelsea, would that come? Would the zone change have to come back to the TRC, or could it proceed from here directly to the planning board? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably your shortest line.
Is the GI through council?
Right, and then keep going with your planning board approval, get a condition on the GI.
Okay. But the town will confirm if the dimensional relief is necessary. Thank you.
Before you give us $400 for the change. So that, with all that.
Well, now that that's done.
Right.
Yeah.
Actual technical comments.
At some point in this soil was planned before we get your building.
Sure.
Can you just explain the drainage and where the water is going to come from, both the rooftop as well as any new pavement?
Yeah, go
ahead. So on here, all of our proposed improvements are on existing impervious areas. We're not creating any additional impervious areas that exist today. What we'd like to do, and I've been talking with Sean Feely with CRMC, is to divert the runoff from this rooftop and any pavement that we're modifying here to erodible soils into this rain garden that will then treat the water quality volume and dispense it into the ASSF that's at the front of the property.
So basically these slides.
And then the access road that we really only need just for future maintenance of the septic system will be minimal clearing, and we'll just put the gravel or a crushed stone permeable path.
Okay. So the wetlands have been delineated. They've been confirmed less than 3 acres, so there's no jurisdictional buffer. We want to mimic those existing drainage patterns. But this will be a nice opportunity to address water quality, even though we're not creating impervious areas, so there's no attenuation proposed, and CRMC is, through our pre-application meetings, has been supportive of that approach.
So I had a question about basically about landscaping around the parking lot. So when DPR applications come in, right, we look at sort of the existing conditions as well. So one thing is that the area of pavement that exists triggers landscaping requirements. Based on this, I mean, I see that it's a wooded swamp, right, like a forested wetland. I'm not sure sort of what level of sort of screening exists now, but it sounds like the rain garden can be used to meet some of the landscaping requirements, I think makes sense to me.
Yes.
But so we'd want to see sort of like a plan of what plantings are in there so we can sort of consider that towards the landscaping piece. I have a question actually maybe that you might know, which is if, for example, the area that's within the Tower Hill Road right-of-way is vegetated, I'm curious about the ability for you guys to take credit for that existing sort of screening or buffering from Route 1 that exists there if it's not on your property.
And if you, the requirement for a parking lot with that size is a 10-foot buffer, it can be reduced down to 5. I don't think we'd go less than 5 because we don't have control over the plantings in the right-of-way, right? So, you could make a case to the board to reduce it to 5 based on the existing plantings
So how would we implement that if our existing pavement is already within the front?
Yeah, I don't think if the pavement is within the right-of-way, I think there's not really anything to do about that section of pavement.
Yeah.
So you would treat the rest.
Yeah. From our past experience with other fire stations for Union Fire, you know, the dichotomy is that it's a health, safety, and welfare. We want to be seen, but we recognize your landscaping to screen, which is why we try to put all the parking spaces not in front of the building. But we know that we're probably going to need some dimensional relief from landscaping, just because of the existing geometry of the building, but I think also because of the nature of the building.
Mm-hmm. So if you ask for a waiver from the landscape requirements, you can sort of go down to that 5, it will trigger a public hearing on 5 to 10. So it would be basically a public hearing. So you would do that, it would still be the
would council be able to do that, and would our public hearing be allowed if it's the council meeting?
Well, the planning board approves the plan according to the regulations. They could, I suppose, put a condition in the approval. I guess I'm hesitant.
I'm unsure of it, and I think I lean towards it might not go that way because the planning board, the subdivision regulations are adopted by the planning board. They're not a town council adopted, and sort of, you know, they're not the body in charge, right? They're the planning board's documents, and so the planning board traditionally is who you need to ask for a waiver from those standards. So I
think when it comes to the sort of parking in front of the building, those things to me are health and safety welfare, right? So you wouldn't put obviously landscaping in front of the building if it's going to be an impediment. I think around the parking lot is probably, you know, fair game for the board to require a 10-foot buffer. We can look at the regulation and send you that appropriate part of the landscape section, and you can really see what you think you might be able to do with it.
Yeah, to the maximum extent practicable, I'm sure we can do something.
Yeah.
I just
because
know
some of these paved areas are existing and already not 5 feet away. So would, to achieve what the ordinance is requiring, is that, you know, to get full credit, are we cutting pavement back?
You would have to, yeah. So according to when you go through development plan review, the purpose of development plan review is to bring the project, the parcel, into compliance with the regulation. So if you can't do that, you can get a waiver, right, if it's not practical. But the waiver process is to go through public hearing.
The council's authority to grant variances from zoning, do they not have that same authority to grant waivers through planning?
I don't know. I think that's something I have to think about. Dr. Amy,
about. It's something we've seen in the past where, you know, we've gone for a zone change.
In the back of the zoning ordinance, there's a whole list of parcels where the council has like changed the zone and then put extra stuff on the parcel.
Right.
Definitely get more particular with that when we submit a detail.
And it looks like the berm is at all the same elevation, so if it does fill up and top over, it's going to top over the full length of the rain garden.
It would be pitched so that it would top over in the direction of the ASSF.
Okay, I'm just saying, is there a down? I know it's only a half a foot, the berm. Is there a downshoot there, or is it going to top over the whole length?
Yeah, we'll specify an outlet.
From it was a half a foot, just arm of the downstream side, so getting erosion.
Yep.
Okay.
know TRC's today, mm-hmm. and if we continue with the DPR scheduled for April 26th, I think.
24th, yep.
24th. Is there a time of when we can submit updated stuff for this meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So part of it depends on whether we're doing basically the public hearing piece, right? So the date you guys are going to want to use to be complete is going to be March 30th. Likely, because either one way or the other, it sounds like we'll have a public hearing, whether it's for the zone change or whether it's for the zone change and waivers from the subdivision regulations. But it seems either way that it's likely the next step is going to be a public hearing in front of the planning board. So March 30th would be the completeness deadline.
Okay.
So work backwards from that to ensure that we have time to make sure you're certified complete from there, yeah. right? But March 30th is the date you need to be complete.
And would, should we be filing, if we proceed in that way, the application for the zone change by that date as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So then we can keep them moving forward in concert together.
Both be on the
okay.
And for your application, it's just complete. So you just have to meet everything. We're going to give you a certificate of complete. You just have to meet everything that's on that.
And the zone change isn't a petition to the council through the clerk, it's actually through the administrative officer of the planning board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you submit an application. You submit an application. I don't know if it goes directly to the clerk or directly to me, but the clerk usually forwards it directly to me once she gets it.
Okay.
So we would need it by that same day just to get it on the agenda.
Okay.
But we can get to that application.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions?
Not here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time.
I'll try to talk to you about that stuff. Maybe not today, but depending on what
yeah. Thank you.
Okay, up next on our agenda, we have preliminary plan review for a minor subdivision. This is Donnell Minor Subdivision, a proposed two-lot subdivision with frontage on Railroad Avenue and Kingstown Road, AP 22-4, lot 16. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm John Kenyon, attorney for the applicant.
Everyone would just state your name.
Yeah. Amy Saunder, Easterbrooks and Associates, land surveyor.
Brian Donnell, homeowner.
Scott Donnell. Wow, sorry.
So the property is at 18 Railroad Avenue. It's a little over an acre in size. It's in an R20 zoning district. There was an existing three-family house on the eastern. On the southwest side of the property. And Brian, after you put, how long ago did you purchase it?
Halloween. October 31st.
He converted the three-bedroom into a two-bedroom, and what he plans on doing is further converting that into a single-family with an accessory apartment, and then looking to do a two-lot minor subdivision, no street creation, serviced by the public water, which is right out front. There's an existing OWTS for the existing building. There'd be a new OWTS for the lot. Meets all the lot size requirements, all the dimensional requirements.
It's revised. Sorry.
Hot off the presses, John.
That one was when we were going to do the multifamily, so reducing the impact.
There's been a lot of discussion on the different options with what to do.
So if you pursue the service here, you still have to do a feasibility study.
And what is the sewer feasibility act to show?
There's money criteria. And the proximity of potable water, soils, producing
that's basically showing that.
It's showing that you're saying
we shouldn't have to bring the sewers in because
the burden is on you to not bring the sewers.
Yeah, the other plan that John was looking at would be if we're bringing the sewers in, we're going to have to, doesn't make sense to do it for one lot.
So the second apartment right now, how many bedrooms are there? Because the accessory is limited to one bedroom, 750 square feet.
It is one bedroom right now.
Okay.
The accessory.
Yeah.
And it'll be limited to 750 square feet.
Yep.
Yes, we have discussed this multiple times. So yeah, the idea is that they would bring that existing dwelling into conformance with to be one rather than possibly existing.
And what's the existing easement? What was it used for?
Nothing. there was evidently a court case years ago. There's a gate back there. I think it's the Tony's back there. That there was a court case and they had the right to use it. But nothing
else. It was a store in the post office years ago in the 1900s and earlier.
And they have access in the old direction? Or?
From the back here. You can come off the back. You can see on the aerial where it goes right through there. So.
Can you explain that?
So it comes off the back here, Sherman Avenue in here, and it would go right through Avenue there. So I think it was kind of a prescribed easement that was just used over years and years.
Oh, this is a paved area here?
Yeah.
Sherman Road, Sherman Ave was described. I don't know how far it went, but it talks about going all the way from one road to another road. So I think he went to court and said, I have the right to use Sherman Ave. And the court said, fine, but you can put a gate up.
Yeah.
So it's not actually, it's not paved or anything, is it?
It's loose pavement from here to here, but this is the only, you can kind of see where that solid pavement is there.
They wouldn't be putting anything.
And there is a gate there, that the gate can be maintained.
So is the existing water service going to be used for the new home, or the new water service is all for the existing home?
Right now it goes to the your house, your place there,
right?
New water service. That was right in front of the new lot. That was actually a question for me for them.
does the town care?
I mean, typically, if it's ours,
it's right in front of there.
You want the services, of course, an intervening property, so
right.
You just
use that for the
new one and put it, the existing service on the proposed house and the new service for the existing.
Right. They just put that in.
We just put that in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the thought was with after Dr. Henry, we just leave that access on and leave the way. So we would have to extend the water all the way down. The water doesn't go past where it is on the stream.
Oh, okay. You just can't some water in the real with that?
I think so. We told him that was the plan. He told us where to bring it to the back of the house and down to the side of the house.
So is the main from down river or is it end up on Kingston River?
It ends right where we enter.
Where the shutoff is.
Yeah.
But is that the, I think that it's probably, I can look into that, John, but I'm not sure.
It ends there.
Yeah. The main is in the road to there?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know that's where the shutoff is.
Yeah, there's a fire hydrant
right
there.
So are you going to have to do an extension?
What do you do?
No.
Well, you should be able to put another service in for the new lot.
Yeah.
It'll go through.
But it may be. Yeah, right now that service connects to the existing house, correct, that you brought in?
Correct.
Yeah. So because it sits on the frontage of the new lot, we probably will bring it in, right?
Yeah.
When you brought it in, you talked to Harry. You told him about your plans, right?
So yeah.
He told me that.
He said go right to the side of the house through this way, yeah. He did.
And we can come off of that one.
Yeah, we should. Again, for my water system, we wouldn't allow it.
So it may require an easement to cross
that.
Yeah,
I was going to say that. I think the plan should have the water service shown on it, and then there would have to be where
the new water service,
easement for the house.
Yeah.
And you won't allow the service to go parallel to the right-of-way instead of perpendicular.
Well, now it
on my right-of-way. Services, whether it's my
what I'm thinking is, excuse me, that this water service that I show here, the new one, will be maintained for the existing structure with a water easement, and then we'll be able to pull in a main more to the northeast there, the east towards Kingstown, and we can do that perpendicular, and I'll show that, yeah. Whatever Henry wants or where he
John, where's the existing septic system? Is it contained within the remaining lot, and does it meet the requirement setback in the proposed property line?
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Existing septic system,
in the backyard.
It doesn't meet the...
Yeah, it's not a current system. It's, yeah.
Is it entirely in the new lot?
Oh, yeah, I would anticipate, yeah, there's nothing over here because there's a road between it, but it's in the back of the lot.
Would you be able to show that just so you can verify
approximate location, yeah.
Yeah, so, well...
I couldn't find anything at DEM.
One of the things we want to make sure is that it's far enough away from the proposed property line to meet the requirements.
Yeah.
Are you sure that I'm drawing that?
Yeah.
As well as, if it's possible, just give a dimension, just to show that this meets the requirements as well.
The other one is 10 feet off. Yeah, that's fine.
Maybe just show that.
Yeah.
One more thought. In your conversation with Chelsea, I think probably you guys have talked through with all of the accessory, you know, figuring out what to do with the existing building, but we do need basically, I think it's an affidavit, but I'm trying to think of exactly what to call it, but something that gets recorded in the land evidence records for that property so that we can establish that as conforming with the single family plus an accessory.
Yeah.
And to go further, I showed the septic on here. Soils testing, is that adequate? We don't have to have a valid septic system design on the new lot as of yet.
Yeah.
Soils.
Mm-hmm.
Verified.
Yeah. Is there a distance on it, John? Proximity? No.
It is. Conformity to the town's upkeep and comprehensive plan. Areas of existing ISDS problems or failure. Soil conditions not suitable for ISDS placement. Proximity to wetlands, coastal ponds, groundwater resources, and other environmentally sensitive areas. Existing and or planned municipal potable water ramifications, economic feasibility, lot size, impact in areas in the vicinity of the proposed extension, and potential effects on private municipal potable water.
Actually, I don't see any issues with many of those items.
No, I'm just saying, it's going to be a balance sheet. Some component can't play a sewers. You know, I don't know about the soils, you know, lots.
Yeah, we'll find out.
It's going to be a balance
right.
You know, this one's for you and this one's against you. You're
right.
Down at the bottom. You know, what's the answer?
I'm just saying, for time purposes. It doesn't sound like we're going to have that done for my service.
Yeah, definitely not.
But if we did get the motion, we'd be
enough. You can get off the next one, but I'll come back to it. location of easement for water service, the location of OWTS on the plan, show documentation of OWTS and these requirements in the new property line, submittal of an affidavit of conformance for the existing single family accessory apartment, and documentation of verified test fit on the new lot.
And sewer feasibility.
Render meeting.
How quickly can you write?
Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion from Chelsea. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Great. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, our friend's got Joel who's playing the fiddle.
Yeah.
Oh, the four.
Joel Brosnan.
Fred, we said, what do we say, by the 30th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wouldn't we, daughters, could you?
We had to leave my wife got food poisoning.
All right, good morning. Okay. Up next on our agenda, we have combined conceptual master plan and preliminary plan review for a major land development project, Cottrell Homestead. This is a request to develop a 250-kilowatt DC ground-mounted principal solar energy system, measuring 28,206 square feet in area on the same parcel as an existing single-family residence and agricultural operation located at 500 Waste Corner Road.
Morning. I'm Andrew Vardakis. I'm a professional engineer with Tanek Foster Wheeler.
I'm Keith Burr with International.
Just a quick recap of the project. We're at 500 Waits Corner Road, the Cottrell Homestead. The existing lot is zoned open space. This is the larger 68-acre portion. The smaller 4.5-acre portion has been rezoned R200, where the project is proposed. The proposed array, less than an acre, 250 kilowatts. Last TRC meeting, we talked about landscaping, which we've added. There was some incorrect line shown for fencing, which we removed, and the proposed interconnection going down to Kingstown Road has been shifted over closer to the property line. The rest of the property is still in agricultural use, so we wanted to move that over, not to disrupt those operations. So those are essentially the changes since last time we were here. There was a question about photos and view from Kingstown Road. So we have some printouts here.
The services are all in the ground, correct?
Correct, until you get to the new poles,
right? And these are at, the balloons are at 8 feet, so which would be the maximum.
Well, do you want to talk about?
Well, I got a balloon, but there was hardly any wind that day, and the wind just knocked down. So the balloon didn't really work too well. This picture is from one corner of the array, and this piece of equipment is probably 10, 12 feet tall. So that was sort of a good reference that I could use. This is the other corner of the array, and there's some trees in there. So this picture is from across the road, and this piece of equipment is...
This is Kingston.
Yeah. So this is from the, there's a little, the park across the street, there's a building over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is from that area, that's the road, and that piece of equipment is right there. So it's below that tree line.
And that tree line's staying?
Yeah, that tree goes, this tree lines go around the two ponds.
Right, yeah.
So we're not touching any of that stuff. And that's from sort of right across. And then if you go further down Kingstown Road, you're actually getting much further away. So that's about 1,500 feet away from the array. When you get down the other end of the property, you're probably half a mile from the array. So there's no ground disturbance, we're not taking any topsoil out, we're not doing anything, we're just trying to drive posts and build a racking off of that.
The
It's in agricultural. It's
the farm vehicles all the way up to the property line.
Yeah, there might be a path along the edge that they don't farm. We're going to stay as close to the edge as possible.
So the concern is that when it's a 50,000 excavation, there's a silt fence ends here, it's on the other side.
Yeah, we ran that down to the vicinity of the second pond here. I mean, typically when you've done these, you're excavating and backfilling all in the same day, correct?
I mean, that's a long trench. It'll probably be a couple of days. You know, it's not going to be.
I mean, if you can excavate, what kind of work is it? If you can backfill and stabilize with like a jute mat and not exceed the 50 cubic yard volume, I don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
So you got the choice, either that or submit or revise this and show this, you know, being surrounded by silt fence.
Yeah, the silt fence, I mean, it's going to be a couple of days that it's going to be open and closed, so.
So would you rather do a silt fence or do the back?
You still have the silt fence pass, let me just clarify.
Yep.
You still do it within 200 feet of the weather feature. But, you know, kind of. Have you rather avoid putting the silt fence on the other side?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just as long as you can, you know, coil and backfill, is it conduit or is it direct?
It's in conduit.
Okay, so as long as you don't pull it out from there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the easiest and cheapest thing for you is just work, you know, and backfill as you go and just get a jute mat down to stabilize the soil. You know, just it's the role of
erosion control matting. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think if you do that, you won't have to.
Yeah, so if you want to add that,
yep,
to the drawing.
Sure.
Yeah, so just put, you know, excavation not to exceed 50 cubic yards and, you know, backfill and stabilize.
Okay. So, yeah, so we're going on. Yeah, we do the whole thing. If you want to excavate the soil, take a little
long. Sure.
So you all got the notice of incomplete submittal for me, just...
Yep, we got that. This is primarily pending our RIDM permit.
Right.
We're not proposing any work in the buffer zone, we're just close to it, so we wanted to run this by them. We've gone out and staked the limits of disturbance, so that's the big piece we're waiting on. The other things are, I think, relatively minor that we can address. We just wanted to get comments back from RIDM for any other changes or anything, kind of just incorporate everything. I'm assuming we weren't going to provide another submittal with this prior to hearing from RIDM. We were kind of thinking we were waiting on that piece before we made another response.
Have you talked to them about how long they anticipate?
They're very vague on that. I think they're tired of hearing from me based on this and other projects. It's at least a month, so we're thinking best bet mid-April, but it could be later. We're not really sure at this point.
You guys already have approval from National Grid?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the things we've talked about this before. I mean, we would put you on the planning board agenda without any condition, but the state law doesn't let us. State law says for preliminary planning, you have to have your state approval to this. So we approve you.
Yeah, that was new to us because we've run into this on other projects and hadn't heard that before.
Yeah,
they don't know about it or choose to ignore it.
Yeah, right. So
is there any way to get to zoning on conditional of planning board approval? Just to kind of speed things up a little, because now we're in May or June.
Right. The zoning board, my understanding of the zoning board is that their practice is that they will not hear an application, they won't accept the application for the special use permit until you have been granted your development plan review by the planning board. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's there.
That's sort of their jurisdiction
that day
more
we
so
spoke,
than planning.
Okay.
And you transferred me over, I forget the woman's name.
Sue.
That's what she said. She said, we will not accept an application without their recommendation in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to explain the situation I think, you know, she understood, but it's just kind of like a black and white, cut and dry kind of thing.
Yep. So we're waiting on the ride-in permit, and then we will move as expeditiously as possible.
Yeah.
You, in the meantime, this will go to the Conservation Commission, right? So they have a meeting the first week, Wednesday in April, is that correct, David?
Yep.
So if you want to submit reduced size site plans, 11 by 17, we'll send that to the Conservation Commission for their review. I believe eight.
No, eight.
So that's scheduled for the next CONCOM hearing?
Yep, and so yep, if you get those in about a week ahead of time is when the packets go out.
Yeah, we can
so
probably do it.
We'll tentatively consider you guys to be on that agenda, pass that along to the planner who handles them, and then.
Was that Doug?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I see some notes here. Can you guys provide the electrical drawings as far as the transformer pad detail?
It's a pole mounted. It's the switch up on top of the pole with the bar in there. There's going to be a National Grid pole that has a metering equipment on it, and a meter. And then the next pole down is going to be our pole that's going to have our disconnect on it. And then we go on the ground through there.
Can you just provide us a set of like electrical poles?
Yeah, we have one line.
What's in the other one?
Well, so were those electrical drawings included in the?
No, we had a one line, but that's all we had at the time of the submittal. I don't know if you have anything more
we
detailed.
We have one line, and we had an electrical submittal with all the electrical equipment in it.
That'll all be reviewed in the application for the electrical permit.
So it's got
the shop orders.
It's got the transformer pad. It's got the transformer. It's got all the equipment.
We can include your department as required for approval on the permit at the time.
That's for the electrical permit or the building permit?
They go kind of hand in hand, so it would be both. Yeah. We require the structural engineering for the building permit and all the site plans, and then the electrical is obviously more specific towards the equipment, the one-line diagrams, disconnects.
Okay.
We talked before, and I feel like we have these same conversations together, on the operations maintenance plan, public safety preparedness and response. I know you guys got approval for all three from Union Fire District, that letter from them.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Which I will send to you if they have not, because they sent it to me.
Yeah.
So they issued an approval for sort of the concert of your projects.
Okay.
So I haven't seen anything from police, EMS, yet, so I don't know if you guys had better information.
No,
on
yeah,
the status
I talked to John yesterday, and I'm editing the plan you gave me for the OM plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to stop by today and talk to the police chief and the EMS chief.
Okay, great.
Nope.
I know.
Okay.
Great. All right, thank you.
On our agenda, we have amendment to an approved preliminary plan for a flexible design residential project and comprehensive permit. Major land development project titled Hopkins Green, a request to amend the preliminary plan approvals for
Hopkins Green Phase 1 and Phase 2 to allow the construction of 32 units previously approved as quadplex structures, as single-family and duplex structures, and to alter the site layout, circulation pattern, and open space provisions on the parcel.
Good morning. For the record, Eric Creevy, I'm a registered professional engineer with Creevy Engineering. This is John Carter, our landscape architect. I wasn't able to stick around. Donnie Packer is the attorney as well. Take back real quick, and we had come out along for a pre-application probably about a year ago now. This development had been approved previously as a comprehensive permit for 32 new units. This is the original approval.
What was the date of the original approval?
Good question. So this is the wetlands set. It was about 08.
No, but I might go grab it.
Right. I can tell you
it was a while ago.
Like 08.
Hopkins, final approval was
11. Was that
11? May 3rd, 2011.
For phase two?
For both
together. Oh, yeah.
So just to kind of take back first, we can kind of get some context here. So it's a comprehensive permit, 32 new units. There is an existing four-family home on the property as well. So the 32 units were put together as 8 freestanding buildings. There were four units in each building, and was kind of put in this layout here. Parking, separate parking areas, dumpsters, and such like that. In designing it, we were looking at, and we came back with a pre-application to get some early feedback on a revised layout. Tony Fiore has since acquired the property and was looking at doing a different layout for it. Didn't like the idea of these units and how they were developed, and wanted something of a more usable product that was more of a neighborhood feel and a product that he felt was better for the market in general. So just, I have this as reference, but The design as presented here has the same coming off of Hopkins Lane. So we're at the let me take a quick step back and make sure everyone kind of knows where we are. Kind of jump ahead here. The property is located just south of, this is the sand and gravel facility. It's north of 108 here.
Access would be
from Hopkins Lane. Yep, Hopkins Lane, there's an existing road, Hopkins Lane, that comes off of 108 here. There is an Emmett Lane that comes from the side. Correct, yep, Peacedale School is exactly. Hopkins Lane today is only somewhat improved, so as part of the development, we're holding all of the improvements that were off-site improvements that were reviewed and approved previously for widening of Hopkins Lane, improvements, there's a stream here, and there's a culvert that's located here, extension of sewer, all of those items would be staying today as well. The development will continue to come off of Hopkins Lane, comes in with a kind of a standard P loop in here. We have 32 freestanding units. The existing four family would stay here as well. Likely to be doing some improvements to it. At the same point, the overall unit would be staying here as well. It's a mixture of kind of a freestanding single unit here and then more of a duplex unit. They all have 2-car garages on them, and they all have enough parking for 2 additional parking spaces as well. In doing the pre-app, we had a mixture of units that kind of had units coming all the way from right here, and it was located around the outside, and then we had through the middle here as well. And some of the discussion items were to create something like a green space. And I think at one point it was talked about trying to move the center unit here, so maybe something you see when you come in would be like a kind of a green space. And John will tell you a little bit more about our thought process and how we've developed this, but we actually kind of went through, and we did have it as being a unit here at first when we were engineering it. And as we went through and we looked at the different elements and the places where the green spaces were located, there's a tree over in this area that we think is something we might be able to work around, so we thought it was a better use in this area as well. But as I mentioned, it's a mixture of single units and then duplex units. units. There's 8 single units, and then there's 12 duplex units, so a total of 24 units total.
As it's proposed, is there anything required?
No. Well, it's under the original comprehensive permit as well, but
no.
That's really much documents here, because that there's some clarity to be had for all of this, which I don't have. Sort of tell me what his legal opinion is.
Okay.
So Hopkins Green, as you know, is approved in 2 parts.
Mm-hmm.
Hopkins Green 1 is not approved.
Okay.
Not approved as a comprehensive permit. It's approved as a flexible design residential project and a multi-household dwelling project.
Okay.
And then Hopkins Green 2 was approved as a comprehensive permit. So the comprehensive permit doesn't apply necessarily, in my view, to the whole project. So there's some clarity, I think, to be given from the attorney to the board about what is being proposed.
Okay.
Is it, you know, is he trying to fit the whole thing now, who is a comprehensive? Is he not? The original had 16 units in each phase, and this one doesn't. Okay, so some of the unit distribution between the phases is different. Merge the lots because some of them are on top of the lot line, right? So there's
sure.
some
yep.
sort of questions there that I think need to be hashed out a bit to figure out what the board is going to be with it. You know?
Yep, understood.
I mean, like, you know, right? There's a certain amount of open space approved in phase 1, there's a certain amount approved in phase 2. We sort of just need comparisons of what is proposed now versus what was approved for each phase.
I do know that it is proposed to be phased as one development. It's not going to just break at one point.
And I think that was at the end. A bit like, I don't know why it was proposed as 2 phases. There are 2 zones.
Sure,
right?
There is, yeah.
Phase 1 was approved for the conceptual master plan and then the living area.
Mm-hmm.
And then when phase 2 was approved, it was conceptual master plan and amendment to the original preliminary. And they were approved together at final. So I don't know if it was intended to be a phase development or if it just happened that way. I don't really know. But,
we'd
like someone to sort of give an opinion on that from your perspective.
Yep, and then we can get to this. So
yeah,
to
figure it out.
Okay, makes sense. So yeah, mixture of single family units and then detached units. This is serviced by sewer, so this is the original development as well. There's a sewer extension that is to come through Hopkins Lane. We are able to kind of do something different than the original. The original actually had kind of some gravity and some force main coming to a pump station in the back, and then it was force main back. The way we're able to grade it actually is to go all gravity, and then we have a pump station in the front that moves there as well. So it's a little more streamlined and easier development. Public water as well will be serviced for this area as well. So stormwater handled on site. We've got we're required to pre-development levels up to 100-year storms for everything. We've got a nice infiltration basin that's located in this portion over here. That's probably the same location as what was originally designed as well. Very, very good soils out here. I mean, as you can imagine, with the gravel plant, it's all very sandy, gravelly materials. The infiltration rate is terrific out there. Very good for infiltrating on site. We do also have an underground infiltration in the front over here as well. So it's collected, picked up and collected on site. There's a water quality piece, and then there's infiltration here, and that ultimately comes to the same. There's kind of just a small spill that comes over to the stream over here, and that's using kind of the same design over here as well. So this physically, visually would look like grass. It's an underground system, both on here and here, look like grass. And actually, John incorporated it into some of the landscape elements. So, John, maybe you can kind of go through some of the landscape features.
So,
I don't think we do. It's not part of the. Okay.
I think what Eric said about moving the unit, kind of some of that was driven by us. There wasn't this. there's a pretty significant looking in mass and scale, kind of odd architecture if you've seen it, house there that's got four units in it. It's got some landscaping around it that's old and probably of the period of the house. There's a grade change from, wait, come in, so here's the house, existing house. Here's Hopkins Lane coming in. There's a grade change from Hopkins Lane up to the house of probably 4 feet, yeah, something like that. So presently the parking, when you come in Hopkins Lane, which is a got a some mill houses, old mill houses along the road, and at the end, right here, there's a mill. It's a factory manufacturing where they make wood products. And then there's the creek that Eric referred to that runs underneath here with a bridge over it. And then all along this edge of the property, there's a retaining of about 4 feet here, and it kind of gets a little lower as you come around the corner, of an old wall made out of fieldstone, cut stone, kind of stuff you see in Peacedale. Yeah. It's really quite nice, and when you come into the site and you see that streetscape, we wanted to see if we could leave that as unchanged as possible. What we did was we configured the parking for the house, which would be down at road level. You'd have to come up a few steps to get into the house. The unit that was sitting right here, we moved, or Eric moved it, into the center over here. And then we took this space. There's a maple tree there. There's some other, as I said, old landscaping that kind of goes with the house. Try to leave as much of that as we can. And then connect the space over here. And this whole area here is going to be open space that can be used by the community. And then the Peacedale School is right sitting over here where I'm pointing. So this kind of gives a green space buffer between these units and the school, between these units and the streetscape when you're coming in. And it's kind of a logical place to have this because it's space that otherwise would just be dead space anyways. And it would allow us to leave this stone wall there to supplement some of the planting there. This is the area that Eric referred to as underground infiltration will be underneath here. But it's just grass, loam, and seed over the top, so it's an opportunity to use that. So, and this is a private road. Obviously, it's not high traffic. You're not worried about people walking back and forth across it. So that's kind of how we approached that area, which I think is a nice sort of transition from this Hopkins Lane and then into the site. This side over here, this Emmett Lane, if you've never been down it, you should. It's kind of like a
dirt road.
I mean, I've lived here for a long time, and I think I drove down it for the first time recently, and yeah, it's a little dirt road and little houses in there. It's kind of nice. I think it's important to keep in mind that this is sand and gravel operation. Timpson's own it. This is sand and gravel operation, South County sand and gravel. This was, so it's just a barren site. And then over here there's a pond and a wetland. This property line over here has a big row of 30-foot white pines coming along here. We're going to leave them, and we're going to actually, in the landscape plan, we'll supplement them, not because there's a requirement, because there's really no incompatibility presently between the uses, but just because it would make sense to screen this view from these people. So this is the area where the white pines are now, and then we're going to plant there, and then Tony Fiore, the developer, is going to berm all along this back property line to give a little bit of sound and noise and visual barrier, and we're going to plant all along that also. Other than that, the interior planting is fairly straightforward at this point. We did a typical unit planting, it applies to this one circumstance. Obviously, the situation's different as you go around. And one of the... Oh, the street... And then a question, because I just... This is not a, it's a question. So does a private road need the street trees? We have them, but is it... I'm not asking would you like them. I'm asking you...
I don't know.
Okay. That's a good answer. I don't know either. Yeah. We do it. It's a good thing, and we would always do it anyways because it's an enhancement. But when I read that, I said, I don't know if we have to do the...
I don't know either.
Okay. Well, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it.
In the future, anyway.
No, I
can
read everything.
All right.
I do have a couple of questions for you about the landscape. One, is this going to be...
Yep. Yep, this guy.
Is there a danger of impacting that construction?
There is. And we've talked about that internally. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm a big believer in if you can't save the tree, you want to take it out. Because I've seen too many times where developers have said they're going to leave a tree and done so much damage to it that 2 years, 3 years, 5 years later, the thing's dead. Then it's a danger to the adjacent building, and it's a big expense to get out. You know, is there a magic? There's all kinds of rules of thumb that none of them are fixed. So, you know, how close can you excavate to the trunk? And people always use this drip line theory. If you go out to the drip line of the branches, that's a good general idea. Depends totally on what kind of tree it is. So if it was a beech tree, that might not be enough. If it's a swamp maple, which this thing is, you know, you can beat them up pretty good and they survive. I don't know the health of this tree. I mean, it hasn't really been looked at hard. It appears to be symmetrical and doesn't have any big major splits in it. So to answer your question, yes, there could be an impact. It might not be able to be saved. We've done everything we could moving this unit. You know, these really can't get pushed any closer together.
Can you give guidance as to what measures should be to, you know, attempt to protect it in the best way? I mean, the plan, like, give some construction methods or whatever.
I will. I'm going to have to. There's a couple of things going on with it. One of them is, you know, the impact to the root zone. And the other one is, you know, does they want to build a building up into the canopy, and can the canopy be cut back? I mean, they don't, is the answer to that. And so the canopy, can it be pruned back sufficiently to allow the building to go up safely but not totally disfigure the tree? I mean, there is no requirement that the tree stay there.
Why have the building be so close to the tree in the first place?
Because there's just no other space. I mean, if you slid those all, David, if we said, let's slide it, believe me, we already squeezed Eric as hard as we could on that issue. So if we said move that building 20 feet away, further away from the tree, and you started this domino effect of slide, slide, sliding, I mean, some of these buildings are 10 feet apart.
What's the zone of requirements for distance between buildings?
There is not one in this case. Well, that's, the question about the comp. Right, so if it's a comp permit and the comp permit applies to the whole property,
would you say, I'm sorry.
That would be the original proposal, which is significantly different.
The comp permit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a question too, right? So when I'd like Donnie to give me some sort of narrative about what he thinks is going on with property. To me, this is such a significant change from the approved conceptual master plan that the 32 units are not necessarily the best thing, right? So that's a question. The conceptual master plan and this plan do not bear any similarities at all. They're not the same. The conceptual master plan approval, you get vesting for the number of units based on the layout and the parking and everything that's shown on that plan. And so if you're making a wholesale change, and Amy Goins and I have talked about this, we don't necessarily believe that the 32 units are absolutely vested. And then that comes down to the question of, well, what's a compromise and what's not. If you're trying to get the whole thing now, who is a compromise? We have a different set of rules than those questions by the residential. So I need to know what that proposal is before I can sort of talk about the rules.
So there's 4 existing units to remain, so is the vesting for 36 units?
36 units. But again, I don't think this project is vested for 36 units. I think the conceptual master plan is vested with the 8 buildings.
Right, which is significantly
significantly different, right. So
at least.
That's the question. I don't know that you absolutely have a right to 32 units in this configuration on this plan. But I need to know what's being proposed before I tell you what the rules are.
The open space is significantly different. And although I can appreciate this, I can't imagine people on this end of the development is going to get any utilization out of that, either visually or in use.
Yeah.
Well, I think the visual benefit is really to the community and trying to preserve this view along coming in to the site. In terms of the use of the open space, I mean,
and there needs to be, I think, a comparison between the open space that was proposed in both phases and what is there now. I have the approval was for phase one had 0.96 acres of open space that didn't include detention basins, roads, wetlands, and phase two had 1.99 acres. And I think that's, you know, you're sort of changing it all almost to phase one now, so there needs to be some sort of comparison to that. I think you also would benefit to have a comparison of the impervious surface, right? What was proposed versus what you're proposing now. And I know you've probably reworked that plan as much as you can, but the, some of the units close to the detention pond, those seem to have 40-foot driveways, more than, which is more than you need for this one car. So the more you can get reduced that, the better, I'd say. The more we'll probably get, because the last plan with the four-unit buildings didn't have a whole lot of impervious surface. You have, you know, maybe a comparison between how much parking was provided and what you're providing now. You have a significant amount more parking than you had the last one. You have the garages and the driveways. And then for the landscaping, we've been having an issue recently where something is approved and the landscape plan or the recorded final plan says, you know, existing vegetation to stay, gives up for limits of disturbance. And then we go out to the site when it's under construction and the developers are arguing, well, that never had vegetation there. So to me, it would be nice to have maybe the landscape plan overlaid on the aerial, you know, current aerial, so that we can see specifically what is there and what's not, just for sort of future enforcement.
I understand what you're saying, because we get surveys that show squiggly lines, and then we go out and it may not. We had a problem with that, and I'm trying to think if it was in South Kingstown or where it was. No, it wasn't. It was in Barrington. And so the aerial, for instance, take the maple tree. So the aerial shows this mass, but you and I are like standing right where the line shows we're in the vegetation, because it's the canopy and we're underneath the canopy.
Yeah.
So
to me, it's one of the areas where, like, you show existing vegetation that's to remain.
To remain.
Those are the areas that I'd like some sort of definition with an aerial maybe underneath that shows that it's actually vegetation there. You know what I mean?
I totally agree, and I understand what you're saying. I do have to say, on this particular site, it's pretty barren.
Well, and that's
and we're not suggesting anything's going to remain at this point.
I looked at the plan.
Except these guys.
There were, I think, along the wetland that says, you know, vegetation for remain. Is there actually vegetation? I couldn't really tell. So.
Well, that's a limit of work. I understand what you're saying. That's a little different, because that's a 50-foot perimeter limit of work.
Right.
So some of it may not be, some of it may presently be grass,
vegetation.
But it can't be altered once this project's
built.
So
I think, you know, from a planning board perspective, they're going to look at your landscape plan and say, oh, that's actually vegetation, but then might not actually leave it.
Right, it may devegetation in 10 years after the project's built, and this guy right here.
Yeah.
Chelsea.
Well, it says proposed edge.
Would you be able to tell us, Chelsea?
It also says existing.
If they did not have a comprehensive permit, what the required distance between the structures are, and also the distance to the property lines.
Yeah, you have to arrange.
Some of that is governed by building code
right
also.
Now, but I think
that's some of it, yeah.
What's the minimum?
I'd have to look at the specific condition, but I believe it's 5 foot to a property line. It has to be 1 hour rated. That's fine. You're saying they're 10 feet apart or less? We're going to be looking at specific.
Can I see your scale? Thank you.
Let me ask you, are there any provisions for fire hydrants in the
building? Yep, we do. Yep, we have two fire hydrants. We have one that comes in first on the right here. It's not on the second, flip to the next page when John's done. But yeah, there's one on the right here. So first thing when you come in, you could put it.
Okay.
And then there was one, I believe, it's right over here. It's on the second, the next page, page 8. Actually,
right,
no, this is just a general layout. Freedom time.
I was thinking more conceptual at this
point. Yep, there's, best is PC number 9 right here. So there's one located in front of units 6 and 7. And there's also one located on the right side. Actually, there's one between 23 and 24. So we actually have three on the right side.
So the multi-household bank development project, which is what this is if it weren't a company, is actually the same as
There's something in the building, in the town building, a zoning.
There's something for the
SMD. Regulates whether you have windows.
That's the SMD.
That's the special management.
It's a certain distance if you have
one window.
So the other project that's coming before us, I think it's
also in the building code.
It's in the special management.
Is that
the reason why there was a requirement?
Right.
What about road standards? Any requirements for?
Well, technically, for a multi-household land development project, it's not a street because it's not platted, so it's considered a driveway, drive access aisle. So there would be, public services would review it and make sure that it's adequate, but the standards found in the regulations wouldn't necessarily apply because it's a driveway.
To answer your question, of what is actually proposed, so it's 20 foot of pavement and 8 foot of berm. So
that's
all.
Station, there's still a number of details on that pump station. I didn't see standby power alarm system, and it looks like you haven't even identified the force main then yet. There's actually a hex there on the thing. You're going to need an O&M manual for the dam, for the pump station as well.
it's greater than 100 year storm. So
I'm just saying, what gives you, if that overtops, what gives you the right to drain onto the abutting property?
It's no different than it is today.
You got essentially point discharge versus larger sheet flow.
Right, for a hundred, greater than 100 year storm. But we're there, by,
if there's over 100 year storm, that water's going on the abutting property.
Understood it. What would you design to then?
No, I'm just saying, I don't have a problem with design. You just need a drainage easement or some from the abutting property. And then on the core, you've got the dimensions haven't been identified.
The embankment.
Yeah, so we need the material spec for the, whether it's 10 to the minus 5, whatever you propose for the core and the installation of that.
We've been finding that the good news is that the pond silt right next door from the facility has been doing great for that, actually.
Yeah, so again, we just
add it.
The material spec for the core and installation specification for the core.
Yep.
And you've got here, I look back at the cross-hatching and it says, all right, you've got 2-1 slope. In the legend, it says this cross-hatching can either be 1-1 or 2-1. Are there 1-1 slopes anywhere?
There are not, no. They're all 2-1.
So nope. Can you change the legend?
Yep. Everything?
And then how about any armory for the, you know, for the emergency access? I don't think grass would be appropriate.
Yeah, we can do some of what we did for probably Tom Mortz or whatever, the Winter Street one. Just put that kind of armament. Yeah. And then it'll look like grass, though. But. Yep.
Natural gas, no?
Not that I'm aware.
I think it's on Kingston Road. So
yeah, I'll take a look. Yep, thank you.
And then you needed to pick the buried telephone, electrical, and the cable in the.
Yep.
And then traffic study. Has one been done yet?
We didn't redo it because it was the same as what was originally approved.
Okay, can you?
I can at least give the original. So.
Right now, you can drive up around back of it.
Yeah, there's a driveway that comes around the back now.
It could stay. I mean, it's kind of unsightly, but.
I mean, I don't know that you. And I don't mean, like, it doesn't have something huge, but, like, if I parked in the space.
Have an alternative.
No, yeah, I understand. I just think it's going to be tough. That's
from
a big
there.
Jump. Yeah, and right now, you ramp up around and somebody parks in the back there. It might be able to be modified.
We'll take a look at it.
Yeah. Make that work.
Yeah, I don't think that's required, but it's not my unit. Move them to undulate them up and down the street to give it a little bit more interest, or some way to put the garages behind them. which is that it's going to give it some sort of variety.
Can relay that thought for sure?
Just generally.
Any other comments, questions, thoughts?
Sorry, you will have to identify which of your units you want to be on.
Thank you.
Assuming that four of the units are going to stay, because that's originally proposed, and then you've got about four more.
One more, yeah. Got it. Check that. Absolutely.
Check
that's easily avoidable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I wonder if there's a way, I'm just thinking about the overall amount of paved area on this plan. It just seems like so much more than the approved plan. And I don't know if there's a way to sort of put the garages together and share.
On the pure paved, it's not. It's more the units that you're seeing, because the units, if you had smaller units before, on the pure page, I mean, when you look at, there was still parking areas between the road network that was there, and then there's still parking spaces altogether. So it's tough, because here's still the road, here's the parking areas and such, so it's still the same level. I mean, it's the units, not necessarily the pure pavement.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that clearly visually it doesn't look different with the amount of the screen space versus the units that are there. I'm not saying that. I'm saying from a pure pavement perspective, it's actually pretty comparable.
Yeah, I think some kind of comparison of those things would be helpful.
Okay. And that was one of the reasons we came before in the pre-app was to get a feel for it.
Yeah.
It's clearly a change in idea of a freestanding four unit, that kind of has parking away from the unit. I mean, if I lived in this unit here, I'm parking here and I'm walking to my unit. I've got dumpsters located somewhere else. It's a different product altogether. And that's why, this is kind of, if I recall, and I'm not going to speak for the board, but it was more of a neighborhood feel that it was, it was, this had a little more of a neighborhood feel to it.
And then when you just look at this place,
sure.
That one. It looks like this one has a whole lot of
sure.
space. So to put some calculation in that
makes sense.
Would be helpful.
Yep.
Just to, even if it's just a perception, then you'll squash the perception, right? Get some data back.
Yep. I'm sure that's going to be one of the first questions anyway. So.
As always.
Yep.
Just something to keep in mind that while you're looking, and I know this is what your primary role is, but when you're looking at all the technical sort of application of the technical requirements and trying to analyze and compare the previous plan to the current plan and so forth, it'd be nice to step back and say, well, which plan do we like better? Because this stuff, a lot of it, as you know, is discretionary. And if you like this or something close to this, you find a way to make that fit inside the box. And if you say, no, we like that one better, I mean, that's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
But to open the book and say,
well,
it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that, it doesn't fit here, it doesn't fit here.
Yeah, I think this one is a little bit of a strange change because of the previous approval process, right?
Oh,
so,
right.
Like, part of it was approved as an FDRP, which has specific open space requirements, right? And so we need to get a handle on, is it still an FDRP?
Right.
Still get that those things. So some of that technical stuff is me just trying to figure it out. The board has to decide if they like the neighborhood feel, they like the multi-household structure feel better.
Because the one I didn't like about this was, I'm not sure, when you come down that Hopkins Lane, it really is a really nice, that's Peacedale all day long, and the little mill houses, and I know I'm very good friends with Bert Strom that owns a little wood mill right near the stream. And it's just got a nice feel to it, and it'd be nice to somehow protect that for the rest of the people, not the people living in here, but the rest of the community. I think by kind of wrapping some kind of protection around here is where you're going to get the best bang for that buck. The other thing is this one proposed using Emmett Lane. Not sure you want to be sending people up and down that road. I mean, it's a public road. You can drive on it. But as I said, I never, in 45 years, never drove down it. I thought I was driving through somebody's backyard when I went down it.
It's pretty rustic.
Yeah, and at some point, people are going to be clamoring they want it improved and so forth. So, you know, there's, and then, as Eric was saying, just the idea of the remote parking versus, so there's clearly arguments in both directions.
The character of Eastdale is sort of small corporate houses, and they're close to the street. So to me, anywhere you can sort of pull the buildings that are more than 25 feet
right.
close there, I think that'd be an improvement.
Yeah, you know, the only way that, I agree, the only way that may work is to pull the road closer.
Yeah,
yeah, because these guys, it's like the pot, you know, they're sliding into the wedge there, and before you know it, they'll be on top of each other.
Exactly right. It'd be the road that's moving out. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be the units that are moving in.
But, you know, Tony Fiore, and I've worked with him a lot, Eric has, you know, he's like a lot of developers, he's got things he needs to do to make the project work, but I found him be very open if you said to him, what if we did this or that or this in terms of sort of decorative elements.
To me, it's very congested. I mean, I'd rather see somehow you work that space in the middle is open, even if it means that some of those other buildings have more than 2 units in them, if that's possible. It's extremely, extremely congested.
And that was my first look at this plan. I thought, oh, that's a lot of buildings on it.
And I know you want to have this as open space. When you come in, it's staring right at you as soon as you want coming today.
I'd like to see those middle units gone and have the entire space be open space there. So, because the open space is fractured all through here. And if there were somebody to have a larger contiguous open space, I'd like to see those units gone.
The open space is behind the structures, and the structures are very close together, so you don't see that these open spaces even there.
Yep.
Some combination of the two plans, such that you're able to leave the middle open, and maybe have a couple of the fourplexes situated.
I guess, I'm not going to speak for him, but I don't think that's the product he wants to make. Yeah. That would be, especially if he kind of had two different products there. I tend to think that would look a little bit interesting. You know, having if you had a freestanding
yeah,
four
yeah,
building,
I
and then
that, yeah.
I mean, you might be able to do.
Understood. That would look a little bit more like a neighborhood.
Right,
that
exactly.
Right there.
And I think, I'm just trying to think, we filled that out. Don't they have some that are three? Or there's one of them?
They proposed a couple
right?
of them.
Some of them are two, some of them are three, and they
yeah.
you don't all fit. Yeah.
Oh, when you come in to the left, I think there's a couple of threes right there.
Yeah. I think so. That
sounds
about right.
Even there's the option to just combine some of the single units into duplexes all around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think yeah.
You know, I don't know how much room that actually gives you. Not as much.
It does.
But
it does at the same. I know he was trying to have a couple different products.
Yeah.
It was the idea to have
sure.
a couple different products, but.
I mean, you know, the board, a couple members in particular, are very. Big on the open space and the vegetation, and
right.
Yeah, I expect there'll be a lot of discussion about that center area too.
and I think we were trying to be straightforward from the beginning and saying that there's a reason this is still unit number one that was numbered. I didn't renumber all of them because it really was a displacement of where one was located, because this was originally kind of a space that we had, because that was some of the pre-op discussion, and we, when we put our heads down and thought about it, we felt that this was a better location for it. So whether or not the planning board agrees with that, that's a whole different discussion.
I think it's, you know, it's a lot more feasible that these people will enjoy space in the middle than these people walking out here to enjoy that. It's just...
It might be too much to ask or think about at the moment, but if you did move the road closer to 15 or 18 and move 31 and 32 closer to the other side of the road, right, the driveways come down a little bit, you might have some usable space within the loop.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you know,
understood.
Maybe combine 1 and 29 because it's a two-day really great. There might be some space for there.
And it'd be nice to have this, this, and this.
Right, and something else. Right?
It doesn't have to be.
Right.
I mean, like, I don't think. I mean, if you're going to do like this four unit, you could do 1, 29, 31, 32, all sort of facing 11, 12, 13, 14.
Mm.
See what I mean?
Four, yeah, facing.
Yeah.
Yep.
It might, and I know you've sort of already engineered and designed this plan, there's a landscape plan, so. But you're basically changing the conceptual master plan, right? So I think to give some different options, maybe.
Well, doing what I do, we really, our principal concern is life safety, and I'm just asking, given the density and the proximity of the buildings, Hopkins Lane is what it is. We've already agreed that Emmett Lane is not really traffic accessible. Would it be inappropriate to invite any commentary from the Union District on the plan?
Union 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are upgrades to Hopkins Lane.
Dude, we're going to make it
proposed.
It's going to be 20 foot. The whole way,
but
that is not there today. It's not there.
I understand, but maybe they might want to comment on that
sure.
improvement.
Again,
and
Union Fire would comment at the conceptual master plan stage. And so since we're not sort of going back to that, we can ask them for their comments on this stage.
Yeah, it seems how it's changed considerably. And again, we're talking about density and proximity. And
make sure everything's good.
Just to get their feelings on it.
That makes sense. I'd rather do that anyway. Especially, I mean, if three hydrants aren't necessary, they only want two. Sure, let's just make sure. Yeah.
Or four.
Yeah, exactly, right? You never know. I know they cost a lot of money to maintain, though, so it's usually that blend of not putting too many, but some.
Again, our principal concern is always life safety.
Of course.
So there isn't a specific checklist for change to amend the approved plan. Preliminary plan and then whatever doesn't apply, I
don't know.
Would be applicable.
That's what we were going effectively by.
So I'll give you a thought on that soon.
Yep.
And then, like the. So this is a hearing.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if
we'll
do
that. By the 30th, and that's next and not impossible.
So we'll get to that and then
May. Just try and keep it moving, getting all the information that's needed. I mean, a lot of good feedback.
I think a lot of it, and so what I try to do is really your completeness is based on the check.
Right.
The other thing is like the comparison between the new and the old. Those are things that I think the board would like to have. They're not required necessarily for you to submit, but we give you those comments because we think it'll help you
in
the process. So.
It helps with once we get there.
Yeah. So we'll just do the things you absolutely have to submit before you go to the planning board, and then the rest of it can work out.
So. Makes sense. Good.
Anything else?
Not for me.
Thanks for your time.